follows. What are the possible symmetries of a theory with a non-trivial S matrix? Here, the non-trivial dynamics is non-trivial as S matrix, and we would like to constrain the symmetries. And the answer was given by the paper, famous paper by Korman and Mandula, a long time ago. And let me go briefly through this theorem. And so the assumption of the theorem was that this matrix should exist. And usually it should be the theory has a mass gap, or if it has no, the theory should be free in the IR. Then the S matrix is non-trivial. Everything scatters into something. And also they assumed that Poincaré group is a part of the symmetry group of the theory. And the conclusion was that the symmetry group is a direct product roughly of the internal symmetry group and Poincaré group. Now, it is well known again that there are a lot of loopholes. And let me list all of them. And first of all, it is known that in two space-time dimensions, there are integrable theories. And this theorem is not applied. Also, they missed supersymmetry. This theorem is not applied for conformal field theories, which are not free theories, quantum field theories, which has non-trivial dynamics, but they're not free in the infrared. And also, the theorem is tied to flat space. So if one considers scattering or some physics inside the ADS, it's also not applicable and is well known in the literature. One can, of course, kind of correct it. First one, Kolman-Mandula theorem is really applicable for space-time dimensions larger than 2. Then it was 10 years after the original paper extended to include superalgebras and to include supersymmetry. For conformal field theories, the explanation is that, OK, this metric does not exist. And inside in ADS, a famous example, which was usually cited as some loophole in Kolman-Mandula theorem, is the Vasiliev theory. So we would like to, in our paper, we would like to ask the following question. Is there a Kolman-Mandula theorem for physics in ADS? Or in other words, what are the possible symmetries of a conformal field theory with non-trivial correlation functions? So that is the question which we would like to address. And first, to avoid loopholes, let's just go through the list what is known about conformal field theories. And of course, there are famous examples of two-dimensional conformal field theories where there are conserved currents of higher spin. So again, as in the usual case, we would like to focus on CFTs in larger than 2 space-time dimensions. Again, we would like to not to miss supersymmetry. So this would mean in the language of conformal field theories that we include generators of include currents of half integer spin. And internal symmetry are available, of course. One promising thing is that there are no examples of non-trivial CFTs with conserved currents of spin higher than 2. So again, this is the question. And the answer that we get is no. But let me be much more precise. What do I mean by this no? And proceed through the assumptions and conclusions of our analysis. Which statement? Yeah, I'm saying it's in D larger than 2. D larger than 2.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we will focus on D larger than 2. Okay, so let's go through the assumption. Sir?
Infinite dimensional symmetries by going to D larger than 2. Never mind.
Yeah, let's go through what we will assume, and then what is the conclusion. Again, ask all possible questions to make it as clear as possible. So we assume that we have conformal field theory, and it means that we have Hilbert space in terms of primary fields, and we have operator product expansion. Importantly, we have a stress tensor, which generates conformal transformation. We have cluster decomposition. Then a very important assumption is the theory is unitary. It will be crucial for a lot of things. In conformal field theory, unitarity in particular, it bounds the dimensions of the operators. Here it was written already by someone. And Then, as we are probing what are the possible symmetries, we made the crucial, again, second crucial assumption is that the theory contains conserved current of spin higher than 2. And this is the whole logic that we assume the theory has symmetry larger than conformal symmetry, and then we would like to show that it is trivial in some sense. And then we made another assumption that we are making is a two-point function of stress tensors is finite. And this assumption, you can complain, for example, about my previous slide that there are no examples of non-trivial CFT in higher dimensions, but there are examples which are n equal to infinity, say, ON models, or Chern-Simons studied recently. In all the theories, conserved currents, they have anomalous dimensions at 1 over n. And if you strictly send n to infinity, the higher spin symmetry is preserved. But roughly, this n equal to infinity is a very special limit in which the number of degrees of freedom is infinite. And here we would like to consider the cases. And if you would like to consider this n equal to infinity, you consider this as a limit. And here we will focus on the cases when a two-point function of stress tensor is finite. Second remark that you can make that, well, but two-point functions in conformal field theory is not well-defined because you can rescale the operator. But for stress tensor, it is well-defined because stress tensor is a generator of conformal transformation. It makes sense to talk about the normalization. So this assumption is an assumption of finiteness of number of degrees of freedom. And we will see also, hopefully, I will discuss these cases where symmetry is broken at 1 over n. They can also be analyzed. Additionally, I would focus on the d equal 3. So it's 2 plus 1 dimensions. And but the whole set of ideas which I will be telling you is applicable to any dimension larger than 3. And another additional assumption which we are making is the stress tensor is unique. By stress tensor is unique, I mean that stress tensor is a unique conserved current of spin 2. In principle, this is technical assumptions. And even in our paper, you can find the analysis when the theory contains exactly 2 stress tensors. And in this case, you can show that there is kind of factorization. But for simplicity, yeah, for the more stress tensors, it's becoming more complicated. But here, I will talk about the unique stress tensor. And this will be the technical assumption. So this was the assumption. Are there any questions here? You can think about them as 2 decoupled CFTs. Yeah, so you take 2 free fields, or one free field, another free field, or 2 interacting theories which are completely decoupled. This is one way. Other way, but there are more options because you can take 2 CFTs which share the global symmetry. You can kind of gauge it, and you will have operators which are roughly entangled. Let me give you a simple example. Take two CFTs, one interacting and one is free, and take the operator, which is product of operator from one theory, times the product of operator from other theory. These operators are perfectly fine, and they're present in the spectrum. And so you cannot say that the theories are completely decoupled, because there are these operators. But in some sense, you can more accurately define what does it mean that they're decoupled, because essentially it's clear if you take 2 different CFTs, the theories decouple.
Do you assume that this higher spin current is constructed locally?
Sorry?
Do you assume that this higher spin current is constructed locally? Can it be written as a local product of the fields and derivatives in the theory?
Let me emphasize another point, that the whole paper is in a bootstrap spirit. So we're never talking about Lagrangian. We start from the symmetries, and we fix correlation functions. OK, let me now state the conclusions that. Yeah, I'm saying that there is a set of theories where higher spin symmetry is broken. So the assumption was the theory contains conserved current of spin higher than 2 is not satisfied for them. So this is a finite end. But there are theories where the anomalous dimensions is so the anomalous dimension of currents is 1 over n. And there is this limit n to infinity, which, okay, it's not say for gauge theory, it will be limited when all correlation functions are factorized, where this higher spin symmetry is restored. But if you would like to consider to analyze this kind of theories where higher spin symmetry is really broken and restored, one needs to do it in a factored special way. Because, yeah, let me tell more about this later. So the conclusion is the following, that the claim number one, the theory contains infinite number of conserved currents. So again, we start with a CFT, and we assumption that we have one more conserved current of spin higher than 2. So the first thing that one can derive, the theory contains infinite number of currents, which appears in the OPE of two stress tensors. And there are correlation functions, any number of the currents, any spin of these currents is fixed with the free boson or free fermion ones, up to one free integer number, which is roughly number of bosons of fermions. But here we don't know, because in the sense that we are not dealing with Lagrangian, we're fixing correlation functions. Now, why there is here free boson or free fermion? Again, remember one of the assumptions that stress tensors is unique. That's why. So this free integer is a number that appears in the two-point functions of stress tensors, which is central charge, roughly, it is called sometimes. And if you'd like to compute them, this is the most general, you start with n bosons of fermions, and then you compute the correlation functions of O n singlet bilinear currents. And this would be the answer, the most general answer, which is compatible with our assumptions. Okay. Let me, so the first I will try to tell you what is the general idea, then we will go from simpler examples to more complicated ones. And now try to tell you how we proceed. So the general idea is that we will consider the CFT of one CFT on the plane or in flat space. And as soon as we have conserved currents of higher spin, we can build the extra symmetry charges. As usual, to build symmetry charge, we start from the current contracted with a conformal Killing tensor, and then integrate over hyperspace. And after this is done, you can act with these charges on the operators. And that's say, usually if we have CFT, we can get word identities, and that's how we fix these three-point functions in CFT. And notice that the action of the operator on the action of charge on the operator is briefly is what I mean by this is exactly integral of a current. So you take an operator, you integrate the current over the sphere, say, around the insertion of this operator, and this is governed by the OPE, and this would be the action of the charge. So again, we start with currents, build charges, and consider the word identity. First, as the warm-up exercise, let's rule out some simple examples, namely the operators of low conformal dimension. Again, one of the assumptions was the unitarity, and in unitary conformal field theory, there are so-called unitarity bounds. As we're in three dimensions, the unitarity bounds, the ones is written here, namely that for scalars and spinners, the bound is an upper line, and for all the currents of higher spin, it's S plus 1. Now, if you introduce a twist, which is a conformal dimension minus spin, you can notice that there is actually a special range of twists from 1/2 to 1, and 1/2 corresponds to free fields, and 1 corresponds to conserved currents, where you can have only 0 or 1/2 spin operators. This is general story. If you can write it in d dimensions, and here it is again written here. This is the lower bound, and for the currents, it's it will be d minus 2. So this twist gap is present for any dimensions. So in this sense, the story is general. Okay, so now if we have CFT with such an operator which lives inside this twist gap, we can ask what will happen if this operator is charged under, say, spin 4 here. So in the first part of the talk, I'll talk about spin 4, but then I'll try to convince you this is in full generality, and here spin 4 is just for simplicity. So, okay, the crucial point for in the whole paper, we use only one charge. This charge is very special, and it is built as follows. You take the current and contract it with a conformal Killing tensor, which is constant and has only non-zero component along the minus direction. Here it is denoted Q minus minus minus. The analog, which you probably know, it will be just translation along the minus. It's P minus. You take usually stress tensors, contract it with a constant Killing tensor, Killing vector, and it gets a translation. So we will consider these charges and act with them on the fields. Again, we are now trying to eliminate the fields living in a twist gap. And here I would like to argue that if you act with this special charge Q minus 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 on this field living inside the twist gap, that purely from the unitarity and conformal field theory, the action is completely fixed. So there is nothing about microscopic theory in this case. This follows just from conservation of twist. So whatever appears in the right-hand side, it should have twist equal delta minus zero or delta. Then, as I told you, since the field living inside the twist gap, the only operators which are available are scalars and spinners. Then the charge has a spin 3, and so you will not be able to build any spinner operator with just minus derivative or whatever.
So here phi is the primary.
Yeah, phi is the primary.
So for the descendant, you would have other cap.
Say again, so for descendants?
This formula, I believe, for the primary. But
yeah.
For descendants, you would have extra terms.
Right. So yeah, definitely phi delta here is the primary. And the point is that for these operators in living inside the twist gap, this is just true in general. Now, as soon as this is known, you can consider what we call charge conservation identities. You can maybe it's more familiar with word identities. Namely, we act with the charges inside the correlation functions, and we get some constraint on them. So usually, if you have a translation, you have here just d minus, and you have conservation of momenta. So it will be sum over all momenta will be zero. So this is translation invariance. But here, due to the fact that it's higher spin, it will be a conservation of cubes of momenta. And if you saw it, this implies factorization for this four-point function. This is, again, a usual story. As soon as we have conservation of higher powers of momenta, the scattering is really limited. So just solving this one word identity, we conclude that the four-point function is factorized. And then to rule out the field, we need to make one more step. Namely, in a conformal field theory, due to the special role of the stress tensor, all fields coupled to it, namely the three-point functions of any operator with stress tensor is non-zero, and also using the fact that we assume that the two-point function is finite, we can look at the OPE of this four-point function in any channel, and if you do this exercise for delta living inside this twist gap, you'll find that there is no stress tensors propagating in this channel. So this field does not couple to stress tensor, which is in contradiction with the basic assumptions of informal field theory. The only way to make stress tensors appearing here is to set delta here to 1/2. This precisely corresponds to the free field. And for free field, of course, everything is consistent, and stress tensor is propagating. This simple argument shows you that it's impossible to have fields living in twist gap, which are charged on the higher spin symmetry. And but this is a very simple example. And nevertheless, it illustrates the idea. We start with these charges and then constrain the correlation function. Now, I think I already told you that. And now, say from this point of view, you can ask why the free field is so simple if you don't know Lagrangian of free field. The free field is so simple because the conformal symmetry and unitarity fix the action of this, okay, if there are high spin charges, to be total derivatives, and any endpoint correlation functions will obey word identities with consideration of n's power of momenta, and this implies factorization. But okay, this free field is, let's not talk about free field. So as we are going up in the along the twist axis, so there are free fields, there is a twist gap where we ruled out, and the next point is in three-dimension twist one. And this is a very interesting point because all conserved currents have twist one. And stress tensor also is a part of this family. So let me remind you about the properties of three-point functions. And this is based on the work done here by Simone Giombi and his collaborators, mainly to three dimensions. And then also there was a paper by these people about just general convenient paper to analyze three-point functions. And in three dimensions, the first group, they observed that experimentally, as I understand, if I'm not mistaken, this was just experimental observations that there are three structures, and there is no general proof that the three-point function always have only three structures. Anyway, so they observed that if you take three-point correlation functions of conserved currents in three dimensions, there are only three structures, and one is the one that appears in the theory of free boson, one that appears in the theory of free fermions. There is so-called odd one. It is an odd one because it contains epsilon tensor, and it does not appear in free fields. Okay, so this you can believe me experimentally for lower twist it was checked, but for our purposes, because we need somehow to prove it, we proved that this is true for, in particular, Lightman limit, which I will talk later. Okay, so this each of these structures is known in this or that form. So the generating function of bosons and fermions was found by Giombi et al. Here we present slightly different, present a slightly different formula because so the formula which you can find in the paper is applicable for integer spins. Here it is just slightly different, and you can use it also for any spins, integer and half integer. Now also the expression for the odd piece can be written in the closed integral form, and this expression is based on the somehow bulk-inspired constructions. I will not spend much time on this because it's not relevant so much for this talk. But you can find that one of the appendix is derivation of why this whole structure is given by this formula in closed form. Okay, then let me remind you just one basic property and tell you also one more useful property. Basic property in conformal field theory, again, because due to special role of stress tensor, is that the three-point function of two operators with stress tensor is non-zero. And also, you can check using the previous results. Then as soon as you take two identical currents of spin S, and you take three-point function with the third one, which is odd, this three-point function is zero. Just take it as a technical result, which can be useful. I don't know whether there is anything very deep about this formula, but it happens to be very useful. That's why I presented it here. And again, we will always interested in all minus charges. So we take a current and contract it with a conformal Killing tensor with all minuses. And we will study all components of the current, which will be also minus. So rule of thumb is that whenever you think that there should be a missing index somewhere, it is a minus. So let's now go how unitarity and the conformal symmetry constrains the action of these charges on these special conserved charges on these special components of conserved currents. Again, the nice thing about these charges and these currents is that on the general grounds you can constrain the action up to several numerical coefficients, which are CIs. Let me emphasize this point again. If you start with the assumption that we have a CFT and we have some charge and we have some conserved current, a priori, you don't know. You have no idea how these charges act on the primaries, because it's not, it is not fixed by anything for it. So you should write the most general expressions. And here's the nice thing about this charge and current is that the most general expression is very simple. So all these partial derivatives are again along minus. And here J k plus I stands for the current of spin k plus I with all minuses.
So I didn't understand. So why don't you know? I mean, the transformation is given by the OP of the current. I mean, you construct the transformation property under some conserved charge from the OP of the current with the operator.
Yeah.
It's not that you don't know. You know. I mean,
I'm saying that. Let's start the following. So we are interested in what will be left hand side equal to.
Yeah.
Here there is this current with all minuses and charge with all minuses.
Yeah.
So first of all, you know that all the charges they transform in some representation of conformal fluid. Now the left hand side, it has a particular dimension, it has particular spin, and it has particular twist. The nice property of this charge, which maybe is essential, is that it has twist zero. It means that it doesn't change the twist of the operator. So whatever appears on the right-hand side, it should be twist one. So again, we limit ourselves to conserved currents by this argument. Now, the fact that the OPE is translation invariant means that you are not allowed to write some function of x. And then matching spin and dimensions, you see that the most general expressions that we can write are just the currents with d minus derivative, because d minus derivative is the only other operator which has twist zero. And that's why this formula is always right. Yeah, we can do a little bit better, because if you have just this formula, it's kind of useless, because we have no idea what a C is, whether it's zero or not. But there is, again, a nice thing, which is that we have stress tensor, which generates conformal transformation. And these charges, they have particular dimension. So if you act with dilatation on these charges, dilatation should not annihilate these charges. And at the level of these commutators, I didn't correct here. It is just S. There is no S minus one. It's the same. It's the same current. Roughly, you should think about this. If you integrate this equality, you should get that Q commutator with dilatation is give you some number, which is the dimension of the operator times the same operator. So this formula hopefully tells you that one of the C's, when you take J K here equal K equal to two, one of the C's is definitely non-zero. And this is fixed by conformal symmetry. And as soon as you have these two formulas, it opens the whole flow, because you know the most general action, which is formula one, and you know that the one coefficient should be non-zero in this action in particular. And again, let me make small digression that if you have operators x and y appears in the transformation of x, it is very simple to check that x should appear in the transformation of y. To do this, you consider the charge conservation identity when you act with a charge on the two-point functions of x and y. And it will, it's obvious, hopefully, that this will give you. Now, let me go through the one particular example which should illustrate how this mechanics work. Consider a theory that contains a spin for a current, and we build this charge that we love with all minuses, and act on it with the stress tensors. Now, as I told you, that there will be one component which is definitely non-zero at the right hand side, which will be derivative of the same current. Now, consider, for example, this charge acting on the three-point functions of spin 2, spin 2, and spin 4, where this 4 is the one that generates this charge. And this equation will take the following form. Here, say these three terms, these are the most general terms that you can have on the right hand side. And then you act with this charge on also on the second stress tensor and also on spin 4. Naively, this equation is differential because okay, there are partial derivatives, there are 3-point functions. But actually, this is an algebraic equation because remember, each 3-point function is completely fixed by conformal symmetry up to this fact that there is a boson, fermion, and odd piece. And there is a simple argument that that shows that the bosonic solution for 3-point functions, fermionic, and the odd ones, they never mix inside the word identities. And the second thing, why this equation is so constraining, notice that each 3-point function here, say, each of the operators is primary, and when you act with a d minus, it's becoming descending. So roughly, this the first term is, or just precisely, the first term is has descendant at level 1 at point x1, second has descendant at level 3, and it's not obvious at all that this equation will be satisfied at all. But it happens that indeed there are solutions, but solutions are very, very, very restricted. From only this one exercise, you can derive the following things. There are, say, three families of solutions. The one when 3-point functions has this bosonic piece, the one that they have fermionic piece. Again, I call bosonic fermionic the one that you get from the theory of free boson and fermion. And the one that have the odd piece. So at this point, you can ask, but how it is possible that, say, I told you that the only correlation functions are of free field ones, but we consider higher spin word identities, and there is a solution which contains these odd pieces, which never comes from free field theories. And it happens that the explanations come from these theories where the symmetries are broken at 1 over n order, because you can effectively apply all these word identities in a slightly deformed way to these theories. But at the level of 4-point function, of higher spin 4-point functions, all these odd pieces are ruled out. And actually, I will try to argue in a more physical way. Then you see that this chain nature of higher spin symmetry, or you can call it like this, that we start with spin 4, but you see that in order to word identity, for word identity to be satisfied, the spin 6 is necessary present. So, and we will continue and generate the whole tower. Then let me make some small remark that by playing a little bit more, you can show that in a theory with unique stress tensor this higher spin symmetry, the 3-point functions of stress tensors can have either only fermionic component or only bosonic plus odd component. And this follows again from the word identity, because what identities, because or charge conservation identities, because it happens that for boson and odd solutions, the operator of twist 1 and spin 0 must be present in the spectrum. You should think about it in free theory, it's just phi square. But in the theory of fermions, there is no such operator. And through the word identities, I'm using the fact, which is essential at this point, that the stress tensor is unique, you can show that there are only these two options. Now, let me present you, just make one more connection with Kalman-Mandula theorem and present you why one physical maybe argument why. It's already at this point, you can think that maybe theories will be free. Yeah, and this is, if you were confused that there was always used spin 4 current, one can show that the theory that contains any conserved current of spin larger than 2, the spin 4 current is necessarily present in the spectrum. This is just technical statement to support the generality of the discussion so far. Now, as I told you, in the conformal field theories, there is no S matrix, but you can define very nice observables which are roughly the same as S matrix, but they exist in any strongly coupled CFT or whatever, which is just you excite the vacuum by a certain sum operator, and then you measure the flow at infinity, so-called energy correlators. And roughly in the free theory, you expect this energy flow to be localized as SA. If you insert stress tensor, you'll get just two bumps, which correspond to two partons. And all the higher spin, all the higher order energy correlators will be zero. So this was analyzed by Hoffman and Mollison, and also here in perimeter by Myers and collaborators. And the nice thing about I told you that there are some restrictions on three-point functions of the stress tensors, and three-point function of stress tensors correspond in this language to one-point energy correlator. So the experiment is the following: hit the vacuum with the stress tensor, and we measure the energy flow at infinity. And it happens that I think in the analysis before, people were studying only the even structures of energy of stress tensors, which contribute to energy correlators, and they miss this odd piece. But it is very special because it exists in only three dimensions for this observable. And it happens that as soon as you have the three-point function being purely bosonic plus odd, there are points in the sphere at infinity where the energy flow is negative. So and this is not what you would like to have in the unitary theory. And at this level, you must to set the odd piece to zero if you would like to preserve the positivity of energy. And also, and then we get the situation when the energy flow has the form as written here, where say plus corresponds to the fact when to the case when 2 2 2 is purely bosonic, and the minus to the fermionic case. The special thing about this function is that there are some points in the sphere where the energy flow is exactly zero, and if you have a theory with showering, you would not expect this to be happen, because as soon as you have a parton, you expect soft gluons or whatever, or any other particles going to the all possible direction, and so there will be no zero. So at this point, one can make a nice conjecture, which is slightly different what we are doing, that in any theory where the three-point functions of stress tensors is purely bosonic or purely fermionic, or in, say, in four dimensions will be purely Maxwell field, this theory should be free. But this is just a small digression based on this picture. Now you can play the same game with only one charge, even with or four-point functions, and you'll get differential equation for two different four-point functions. And here at this level, it becoming a real differential equation, because at the level of four-point functions, we have functions of non-trivial functions of cross ratios. But it happens that at this, say in this particular case, you can solve this differential equation, and the solution affixed to up to one constant, which is again the central charge of two-point function of stress tensor. So the purpose of the slide is to show you that this one charge conservation identity, it fixes two four-point functions up to one constant. Okay, so far we were using only one additional charge, and we fixed some four-point function. In principle, one can continue. I gave you the argument about the elimination of odd piece using energy correlator, but if you don't like it, this can be done at the level of four-point function. Again, one can check that there is no solution for the odd piece, and take the OPE. I never told you about free fermion, but the story is identical almost, but it's a little bit more complicated, because say if you want to deal with scalars, in the theory of free fermions, the scalar has twist two. It's psi bar psi, the scalar operator, which mixes with conserved currents, and it complicates the analysis, but the result is the same. So this was one. So far I told you two little bit separated stories, one about twist gap. Second, I told you about the conserved currents, but we were dealing with one charge, which is Q4. And definitely, if we have infinite number of charges, it should be a better way to use them all, to use all the symmetries to fix correlation functions. And now, I would like to tell you about the less transparent way, maybe conceptually a little bit more complicated, but it's a way of doing things, but it simplifies a lot of things drastically. So the idea is the following. So I'm now starting a little bit different approach, the same thing. Consider this light cone limit of two conserved currents. The light cone limit, again, we think that, say, right here, that yes, we're in this in three-dimensional space, and the light cone limit is such that we first send the x plus, so we take two currents, and we send x plus separation to zero, and then we also send y separation to zero. So these two currents will be separated along the light-like direction. And as you know, this kind of OPE is governed not by scaling dimensions, but by the twist. This limit written here, it is very special. Namely, first of all, the order of limit is important. One can check that it's an order-dependent limit. Secondly, this limit it takes from the OPE the twist one contribution. So we start from two currents. We take the light-like limit, and we extract twist one operators. This comes from the fact that there is a first power of y here. Now, okay, why should we do this limit? Why should we care? There are several reasons. One reason which I forgot to tell you is that in general you can expect, say, let's start with CFT with higher spin current, and the idea will be to find the free field. But this is wrong. You will not be able to find free field, and because there is simple counterexample where you take n bosons, you impose singlet constraint, and the free field is gauged away from the theory. So you have we have an example of theory where there is higher spin symmetry, but there is no free field. So you should not expect to find such an object starting from the very general assumptions. But what's nice, maybe you can expect to find is a bilocal operators, which is a product of free fields at different points with a singlet constraint. Yeah, you will never rule out this by gauge symmetry, or at least at this level kind of color constraint. And the nice thing about these bilocals is that, okay, these are just free fields inserted at different points. So you expect the weak theorem to hold. Also, the OPE will generate you a whole set of currents. And the idea of this approach is to try to identify this bilocal. This bilocal is just it's roughly, you can think about it in free field as a product of two fields at different points. And it happens that we will look for this bilocal through this light cone limit. And this was the first reason why it is useful. But second reason is that the three-point functions, they simplify dramatically in this limit. We can understand that in the following way. All currents, all conserved currents, they have roughly the structure as follows. You have field, bunch of derivatives, acting on other field. Now, if you insert these two fields along the minus direction and take x plus to zero, it happens that as soon as you contract two fields with some derivatives on them, this will be the propagator of the form, say d1, d2 to some powers, acting on 1 over x. And here there are minuses. And these derivatives, they will always generate you x plus. And we send x plus to zero here. It means that all such terms will die. And the only thing that will survive is the one when all derivatives act only on one field. And the second field is contracted with other currents so that you have purely 1 over x, where this is a distance. And then you send x plus to zero, distance become 1 over y, and y is canceled with this piece. And then the fact that all derivative acts on the second field at the level of three-point function, you see it simply as follows. So you take the limit of three-point function. So here I call it bosonic limit because the only bosonic solution of three-point function survives. And it happens that these labels of spins of first two currents, say first and second current, they become simply total derivative. So all three-point functions in this limit are given in terms of one very simple function, which is a three-point function of two free fields inserted at point x1, x2, and contracted with the spin as double prime at x3, and then you act simply with derivatives. In general, if you take three-point functions of different spins at different points, this will never be simply like this. As I told you, there is this complicated generating functional. You expand it, you get some functions, and here you get just all derivatives. And this will be very, very important. Are there any questions? Okay. So now, for example, one can easily show that using this limit, one can easily show that there are infinite number of currents. And again, in principle, one can do it using the approach that I told you theoretically, but practically it's becoming impossible. And here, if you consider the charge conservation identity, when you start with, again, this say QS, build from JS and act on 2 to S, you will get some equation. But now, what is important is that these equations become very, very simple. Because all these labels, which comes from here, S, say, S on 2, S acting on 2, will generate, you say, 100 currents of different spins. And so in principle, you need to compute 100 different correlation functions. But in this limit, all these correlation functions, they're the same, because they have total derivatives. And all these 100 terms will sum into one, the one term with some constant in front of it. The same will happen with the second. Here, this is comes from the acting with the charge in the first field. This comes from the acting with a charge on the second field. And this practically how the charge conservation identity, which say I study, I wrote here, it looks like. Okay, so you get this. This phi phi star JS is a known function. And this equation is really equation for alpha tildes, which are coefficients in front of some currents, which probably appear or probably not in the theories that we are considering. And again, the crucial point is that one of the alpha tildes should be non-zero. And this fact comes from the two very simple ideas that I told you. One is that when you act on the stress tensors, you should definitely generate one of the terms due to dilatation, imitation relation of this charge. And secondly, as I told you, with this x and y, it happens that the first formula implies that the stress tensors appear in the commutation relations of, say, JQS with JS. To summarize, we consider this charge conservation identity, and you find that all the lambda tildes are non-zero. Say, when k, which is index here, is equal to 2, 4, or 2s minus 2. Okay, let me try to explain what this physically means. This means that we start with a stress tensor, an additional current of spin s. So this is our assumptions. As soon as we have these two objects, stress tensors and JS, we can consider this charge conservation identity. And now the solution and the fact that, say, all these coefficients are non-zero, it tells us simply that the theory contains not only 2 and S currents, but it contains the full tower which of currents with the spins 2, 4, blah, 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 and 2S minus 2. Repeating this operation, you will generate infinite number of currents. That's how you do. And this follows all from one equation. There is very nice way to look at these equations and actually to look at these formulas in the literature for higher spin currents using somehow kind of momentum space or kind of amplitudes or form factors. And this is the last appendix in our paper. I will not tell you about this today. But these kind of equations are very easy to analyze. Now, let me tell you where is this bilocal field. Remember, we would like to fix correlation functions of conserved currents. And to do this, we would like to find the bilocal operator, which is a So the idea is to find the bilocal field roughly, which would be the product of three fields at two distinct points. The nice thing, as I told you again, is about this, that the correlation functions of a bunch of Bs, they will obey Wigg's theorem. It's the first. And the second thing is that if you take the OPE, these Bs generate, they generate a bunch of conserved currents. So by fixing the correlation functions of Bs, you can fix correlation functions. Okay, so the suggestion is to find this bilocal in the OPE of two stress tensors. And namely, if we take this light cone OPE, the bilocal which we will study appears very naturally. Now notice that by studying this limit, you can, first of all, due to the light cone nature of the limit and the fact that we focus on the twist one field, this B will contain only conserved currents for only twist one operators. Remember, we just focused on the light-like limit where twist one contributes. So Bs, it contains probably infinite or maybe one conserved currents. But if three-point functions of stress tensors with bosonic component is non-zero, then simply by taking this limit, you know that B contains at least J2. And also, by looking at the three-point functions, you can convince yourself that this B will be nice also in a sense that it will transform as two fields of dimension 1/2 inserted at different points. Let me emphasize again that in principle, you can take this limit in any theory. It can be interacting conformal field theory. You can construct this bilocal, and it will contain only stress tensor here. And if you act with conformal generators on this bilocal, it will behave like a product of two fields, in the sense that it will transform with weight 1/2 under both points, and it will obey Laplace equation with respect to x and y. But it will not be free field, of course. It will be some operator which you construct in any CFT. Then we would like to, in general, these operators will be what we call quasi-bilocals in the sense that though they transformed and the conformal transformation is the product of two fields, if you insert it inside correlation functions, you'll have some non-physical singularities and something which you not expect for truly bilocal operator. Now, so in the theories with higher spin symmetry, it happens that this bilocal behaves as a true bilocal operator, or namely the product of two free fields. So the next step is to show that under higher spin charges, this bilocal operator defined as the light cone limit of two stress tensors, it transformed very simply. That is, it transformed as a total derivatives. Again, this is nice because remember, if you go to a momentum space, this equation will lead to conservation of, say, s minus 1's power of momentum, and that will imply factorization. So this is really nice thing about these bilocals. So let's try. I don't have so much time, but the idea is that we would like to prove this, and again to prove that this is true, we start again with this charge. QS act on the B, and then we write the most general thing that can appear on the right hand side from conformal properties, and then using a set of charge conservation identities which are written hopefully in detail in a fairly detailed way in the paper, you can go step by step. This is a little bit technical part of discussion, and show that this B tilde is, say, here B tilde is operator that contains all odd spin currents that can appear in the OPE. Here is an even, and then you go through the list of word identities which are written here, and show that essentially, I don't have time to present this argument, but this is very some simple argument. When we use it's the same again and again, the same word identity, more or less the same. And by solving this one equation, you can show that whatever appears, it will act very, very simply. Yeah. Now, as soon as we're at this point, we're almost done, because now we can consider endpoint functions of these bilinears, and we have infinite number of conserved currents. We have finite number of points, correlation functions, infinite number of constraints of this form. And if you go to momentum space, this will be conservation of some powers of momenta, and it will apply factorization. Though you can say, okay, but why can you go to Fourier space? Because you define this operator very special way in a Lyapunov limit. You can argue the same factorization in coordinate space. And then, using also the fact that these Bs, they transform in the particular way under conformal symmetry, you combine factorization, conformal and rotational symmetry, and permutation symmetry to see that, and also using cluster decomposition, all these basic things, you see that everything is fixed up to one point, up to one constant, which is here it's denoted n tilde, and you can get all these correlation functions of Bs starting from n fields, n bosons, computing correlation function, and then analytically continue in n. So at this point, the claim is that if you consider simply these highest inward identities, then if you take free theory and analytically continue in n, it will obey all axioms of CFT. But now one would like to argue why this n tilde here is quantized. And the idea is, again, it's based on very general fact. The general fact is that this, at first sight, innocent action of analytical continuing number of fields is really drastically changes the spectrum. Roughly, it's better to maybe illustrate in fermion, in the case of fermions, where you know if you have, say, n fermions, and you take a bilinear psi by psi, if you take it to n plus 1 power, then due to Grassmann nature, this operator is 0. It will be let's take psi bar psi with only 1 psi, and if you take this operator square, it should be 0 due to anti-commuting nature. But if you will consider this operator through the OPE of, say, stress tensors, you will see that this truncation of spectrum, which is fermionic, happens only when number of fields is integer. And here it is presented the operator in case of bosons, which is again this roughly the analog of this psi bar psi. And it is built in such a way that as soon as you have some finite number of fields, then it will become zero as soon as you go to higher enough powers of Q. And then the argument is that if this n tilde is not integer, the two-point function become at some point negative. So you get negative norm state. And the unitarity implies that n tilde should be quantized. So let me finish almost. So okay, the story with higher spin symmetry is broken at 1 over n. In this case, you consider conserved currents with anomalous dimension at 1 over n order. And recently, again, I'm sorry, I did forget to put here references. It was considered by John Bean and a lot of other people, and also by Ironi, this vector-like models with Chern-Simons, where this scenario is realized. Where the divergence of current is not zero, but it's 1 over n. So if you take n to infinity, the currents are exactly conserved. In this case, something nice happens. Namely, if you take, again, we would like to study the same word identities. But now, how we study them? We start with the insertion of divergence of current inside the correlation functions, and then we integrate them. That's the usual word identity. But now, due to the fact that this is not zero, you get extra terms. And these extra terms, they take very, very interesting form. namely using, say, factorization and factorization and the fact that you integrate over the volume, you see that you can generate effectively so-called shadow fields. This explains why, maybe you don't remember, but I told you when you were solving word identities for 2-2-2, I told you that the for odd piece, scalar should be present in the spectrum, scalar of spin zero, which you denote here, spin zero. And in the paper of these people, they start from fermionic theory, and they have higher spin symmetry at leading end, but they don't have this scalar. And it happens that this scalar is effectively generated. So this theory, the breaking of higher spin symmetry, is such that if you look at word identities, it looks like you have additional operator. This additional operator, it is shadow field of the real operator that's present in the theory. Okay. So let me conclude. So we analyze the problem of these possible symmetries in D larger than 2, and we focused on D equal 3. Use only basic properties to show that correlation functions become trivial. Then, what I told you, the analysis heavily relied on the fact that we are in three dimensions, but actually almost all that I told you is precisely identical to any dimensions. The only difference would be that you will have more free field. Different types of free fields. Say in four dimensions, you will have scalar, spinner, and Maxwell field also. In six dimensions, it will be, say, spin 2 self dual field. Then it happens that the same approach can be effectively used to analyze the cases when higher spin symmetries are broken at 1 over n. Say, in Chern-Simons theory, to fix this A1 and N2, you can go through kind of rather complicated exercise. But here you can show that, say, their ratio is fixed by conformal symmetry in this. And then you're not talking about microscopic theory here. You say that at n equal to infinity, we have free fermion. And then there is whatever breaking mechanism of symmetry, which is at 1 over n order. And you write the most general expression. So whatever mechanism is, Chern-Simons or something else, it should be this. So, of course, this analysis was partly inspired by this nice activity around Posidic theory in the ADS. And so our analysis implies that any higher spin symmetric theory in ADS that preserves symmetry at quantum level and the Balkan also with higher spin symmetric boundary condition, it should be described by free field at the boundary. Then the fact that at n equal to infinity, there are these theories with breaking. It will correspond to that at classical level, you can have more options and maybe this parity breaking Vasiliev versions of Vasiliev theory. Because they can be described as this Chern-Simon theory where the symmetry is broken. Okay, also, in general, this was the illustration of maybe the only example I'm aware of a bootstrap in higher dimension. When we start from axioms, unitarity, Hilbert space, and blah, 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 and never talk about Lagrangian or fixed correlation functions. And there are some open problems. There are obvious ones, which is to consider D larger than 3, and consider one can ask other minimum. Is it possible to have some kind of minimal models, namely, in, you know that in two dimensions, the correlation functions of stress tensors, they're fixed just by holomorphy, but you can have non-trivial theories. Here it is different because, okay, we have three dimensions, so you expect that the same, there is no this holomorphy, you expect that this argument will not work and there are no minimal models, or namely theories where you, I argue that correlation functions of currents are trivial, but you can say, is it possible to have a theory with where correlation functions of currents are trivial, but there are some other operators with non-trivial dimensions, anomalous dimensions, nevertheless. And this this question we haven't addressed, though the whole analysis somehow supports the idea that this will not be possible. And also this question only makes sense if you think about unique stress tensor, because let's say you have two stress tensors, then you take interacting field theory, interacting safety, you couple it to free safety. In free safety, there are higher spin currents, so you have operators something like phi time, I don't know, Kanisha operator, and this will be charged on the higher spin symmetry, and so there will be whole kind of entanglement. And the only way to make pure statement about this minimal moles, we have unique stress tensor, and we analyze the spectrum. Then one can analyze multiple stress tensors. Again, two we go through it, and it's kind of trivial. And multiple one, it's again clear why it will be more a little bit more messy. Then maybe the most two more interesting points is that in principle you can try to apply this idea or this philosophy to any theory, say pure Young Mills, n equal to 4, any theory where to compute correlation functions to build perturbation theory by considering this anomalous word identities of broken higher spin symmetry. And in this case, you don't need to talk about spectrum. Everything is gauge invariant. But it would be nice. Probably it will be not in any sense easier than, say, usual perturbation theory, but it's nice to understand it better. Then it seems that this, at least in these theories with Chern-Simons with broken at 1 over n, theory can be solved, say all structure constant can be fixed, and maybe higher spin correlation, higher point correlation functions can be fixed in this Chern-Simons plus fermion boson theory using this higher spin symmetry at n equal to infinity point. Yeah, I didn't have time to talk about this in detail. And yeah, thanks.